But this Shauger, of course, the big conversation in Edmonton was free agency. Kyle Turris also, he was signed on Friday, we knew that. But then they get Tyson Barrie on the weekend on a one-year deal, less than $4 million cap hit. I really like that signing. Where do you come out on Barrie?
Oh, I think it's just a – I think it's a win in every direction you look at it. You know, I mean, how many times have we said Tyson Barrie's name on this show or the morning show over the last 5 years, quite frankly? Like, this is a player and an element that this Oiler team has needed for years. And, you know, when they drafted Evan Bouchard, they stopped looking for this player. And I still think that was a mistake, because I think in an ideal world, and I know it would be tough under the cap, but in an ideal world, the Oilers would have Tyson Barrie plus Oscar Klefbom, not instead of. This is a player they've needed, and they have not been able to go out and fill this need. So Ken Holland, in a pinch, in a tough spot, pulls off a nice move. And for Tyson Barrie, this could be a real nice move too. I just think it's a fit all the way around and really, really solves a problem for the Oilers. And the other thing I'm going to say too is that I'm not convinced that this is a one-year-and-done relationship between this player and this team. It's early, but they buy themselves the first right to negotiate with them heading into free agency next year as well.
Sure.
And if it's a wonderful marriage where everything works great, you kind of try and find ways to make it work, don't you?
Yeah, I could see it. No, well, especially when you consider that Larson's contract is up next year. Same with Chris Russell, for sure. I could see Tyson Barrie sticking here past one season for the Edmonton Oilers. All depends on the contract number, for sure. But it definitely is something I think they will look at, no question about it. Oscar Klefbom, and here's an interesting one. So Oscar Klefbom today, it was announced that he's likely Ken Holland's planning on not having him for the entire season. Right, so yeah. Came out and said that, which then led to a lot of people speculating based on injury, based on, like, what if Caleb Jones has an excellent season? Would you not protect Oscar Klefbom, considering his injury history at that point, if you would protect Jones, Bear, Nurse, and Barrie?
Jones, Bear, Nurse, and Barrie. Well, you would have to have signed Barrie.
Sure.
To have to, right?
Yeah.
So if Barrie agrees to a deal and signs ahead of time, then you've got to potentially expose Klefbom. So if you know that you've got Tyson Barrie signed long term, Klefbom hasn't played in a year. I would probably strongly consider that, and it depends on the things that Klefbom is saying. I mean, if he's raring to come back and healthy as ever and, you know, beating down the door and really wanting to get back, and you believe that he's recovered and healthy and ready to go, it's a little more painful to do, you know. But if things feel uncertain at all, then, yeah, I would consider doing that, I think. If it fits in, right? Because don't you have to expose guys who have played a certain number of games the previous year and...
Yes.
There's criteria in who you have to expose, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if he hadn't played at all?
Yeah, you'd have to have a defenseman who has played. Well, no, Klefbom, because he's played in his career. Klefbom would be eligible. I'm 99% certain on that.
I thought there was a caveat about games played the previous year. Maybe I'm wrong, but or maybe it's in the last 3 years. Or
yeah, it's well, there you have to have played minimum that or so many in the previous two seasons.
Right, right.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure Klefbom, I'd double check on it, but I'm pretty sure he would. The Mike Smith signing, what do you make of it?
I think they overpaid by $500,000 or so. I don't know that there would have been those offers, that same offer for Mike Smith somewhere else. No, I don't know that there wasn't. But my sense is that maybe that wouldn't have been the case. They brought the overall risk level down with the bonus structure and with it being less than the last contract was. So, you know, they brought it down. It's 1.5 plus bonuses. But there's a no trade in there as well. And I don't know that Mike Smith would have gotten that somewhere else. So, you know, I think, yeah, did they play absolute hardball, you know, to the end of the ninth inning? No. Did they maybe pay a little extra to just get this damn thing done? Looks like it. The one thing we don't know is what their impression is of his impact in the room. And I know people will roll their eyes and go, oh, God. But that is something that's important, especially when it comes to a backup. And I think that we could see the shift towards Koskinen happen a little more this year. And so that's one thing we don't really know. If they feel like he solves a problem for them in the room and is really, really good in there and gives them something that they haven't necessarily gone out and gotten, then there's maybe some added value there. But I do think it's a bit of an overpay. You?
Yeah, the base is a little bit high, no question about it. It would have been $1 million with bonuses up to 1.5. You know, I think that's a little bit better. But you're right. I think the leadership and vocalness in a room and competitiveness that team lacks a little bit of, I think that's why he's there. Now, we'll see. Here's the reality. If you're not playing well, then that stuff isn't going to matter because you're not going to play that much anyway. And then, you know, we'd have to see if Forsberg or somebody gets called up because, you know, I'm expecting more of a condensed schedule. So, you know, you're probably, you know, I don't think they're going to be playing Koskinen a lot of back-to-back. So, you know, Mike Smith's going to have to play like he did in the second half. If Mike Smith plays like he did from January to March, the Oilers are fine. He had a 9-11 save percentage. You know, he won a lot of his games, but he had, you know, if he's a 9-11 as your backup, you'll take that.
Yeah. I mean, the one concern that I've always had about his game is that, and honestly, like, this did bite them in the playoffs. It did. So while you can live with it over 82 games, in a crucial moment in the playoffs, you can't. He plays the game his way, regardless of the score or the situation. And that's an issue. And to me, that's one of the main issues with Mike Smith. No matter what the score is, no matter what the situation is, he's playing his game. Almost to the point of just being stubborn about it. The amount he came out of his net to play the puck in that first bit was stunning to me. So there that's a hiccup in his game that I think if you felt like you could work with it and you could get him to maybe, just look, like back off of it a little bit. But he's never really, at least what I've seen, had a willingness to do that. And to me, that can be a little bit of an issue in his game that, hey, come playoff time, you know, it stung them. And I'm not saying, I don't know that it's going to again, but it did a number of times through the year. And I don't know that that's a fantastic quality. So maybe I'm being a little too hard on him. And the competitiveness you like, and honestly, probably his competitiveness is probably what makes him that way, right? He's stubborn and competitive and believes in himself and like, damn it, I'm going to do this my way. And you love that in so many ways. But that's one way where it backfires on him, I think. And so, you know, there's risk-reward with a goalie like that.
Ryan Rashog from TSN joins us. Shagar, one last one. What did you make of the moves Vegas made for Pietrangelo? Then they trade Schmidt to Vancouver. A Hall goes to reunite with Ralph Kruger in Buffalo.
Yeah.
Calgary, of course, gets Markstrom. Vancouver gets Holtby. What did you make of all the other moves?
Well, if I'm the Oilers, I would rather have Tyson Barrie and Mike Smith than Jacob Markstrom. I think that miss on Markstrom afforded the Oilers a better chance to be better this year. The combination of Koskinen and Smith, if you think about what the gap would be between that and what Markstrom potentially gives you, I think the money's better spent on fixing the Klefbom situation with Barrie. So I think that worked out better for the Oilers that they missed on that one. I think that I like Nate Schmidt, watched him all playoffs here. Great guy in the room, great teammate, beloved by his teammates, and really, really good. The guy's just a full-on gamer. So I think that's a great Vancouver landed a heck of a good defenseman there. My sense on the Taylor Hall and Alex Pietrangelo contracts is that there is not any semblance of a COVID discount there that I can see. I think Alex Pietrangelo, if none of this would have happened, would have come in right around that dollar figure. And I think there's relevance there to the Nugent Hopkins negotiation because part of what they're trying to figure out, I would imagine, is what is a COVID discount right now? Flat cap, tough economic situation. What's his market value? And then how do you discount that properly? And what we see with these two high-end signings is there didn't appear to be a lot of one. at least to my eye.
Yeah, they like the one contract that I think's got the best chance to be we screwed up is Torrey Krug, 7 years for a guy who was a second pair defenseman in Boston, and now he's probably gonna have to play first pair minutes with Parayko, which is great. I could probably do it for a few years, but for 7 years, to me that's somewhat of a
risk.
But
if you look around at these top of the market guys that signed, do you see anybody giving any discounts anywhere? I didn't.
Well, like Tyson Barrie. 3.75 right. for Tyson Barrie on a one-year deal. I think that's a fantastic contract for the Oilers.
Right, but I'm talking about, so Pietrangelo was top of his class. Hall was top of his class. Krug was right there next to Pietrangelo as one of those guys. Like, I mean, Barry's a bit of a different situation, but do you see, because I think everybody was wondering, what's it going to look like? Is there going to be this big understanding of the financial landscape and contracts are going to be suppressed? I don't think we saw it at the top end.
Well, not the top end, but usually it isn't. It was usually going to be the guys in the middle tier and then below, right? Like, you look, I'm very curious to see what guys like Hoffman and Dadanoff and Athanasiou and a lot of these guys still available who thought they were a little bit maybe higher, like Tyler Toffoli, you know, at $4 million.
Yeah.
You know, people thought maybe he'd come in a little bit higher and such. So those are the ones. You know, I wasn't surprised that, you know, Pietrangelo got around. I thought he'd get around 8.5 and, you know, came in a little bit higher than that. You know, I thought Hall, people were saying Hall was going to sign for $6 million. I was like, no chance. But,
yeah.
And I'm not surprised on a one-year deal based on the conversations I had with them. I thought, you know, I've argued for star players for years should go shorter-term deals at higher money in the NHL. If I was a star, if I was an agent, and I talked to two agents because they actually reached out to me after a tweet I made about it. They said a lot of them have told their clients to do it, but a lot don't want to do it. It's kind of ingrained in the culture of hockey players. But I do wonder, all it would take is a guy to do it twice, and then it would change the thinking and say, oh, look at that guy did it.
Yeah, but all it would take is for a guy that signs a one-year, $8 million deal to destroy his knee and have left $60 million on the table. Like, it's not about the culture of hockey. It's about show me my money. Because the second you sign, you're gonna make $130 million in your career. What's the difference between 122 and 130? Guarantee yourself the 122, because what's the difference? So I am way more in the camp of get your name on the dotted line and get your dollars. Betting on yourself in your late 20s in a contact sport, it's just bad business to me in some ways. Now, I get why Taylor's doing this because of the market, but this is an outlier to me. What we're seeing in Barrie and Taylor Hall, that's situational based on the landscape right now. I think it's bad business in any other year. Get your $60 million on paper and walk.
NBA guys do it all the time, and
that's not hockey though.
But how many star guys are ripping up their knees in big contracts? Like, that's what we'd have to go look at. Like, is the potential there? Sure, but the potential's there.
Well,
for
never
you and
mind
I
how many star guys rip up their knees in contract years. How many star players?
No,
get
that's
hurt?
What I mean. After I'm talking about after they've signed a big deal that got that had a big and blew out their knee for
wow.
a year or two.
The hockey players get hurt all the time, like all the time, and you know. Sometimes if you get, like, imagine if Oscar Klefbom had sort of decided, well, you know, I'm gonna, you know, bet on myself, and he did that at the wrong time when he had the long-term injury. Like, for different players, it's, look, I get it. Like, you got to have confidence. But if you're talking about the difference between, let's say for Taylor, like, let's say he has a really good year this year and can do, how much is he going to make after a really good year? $9 million a year? Does he get an extra $1 million per year on a 7-year deal or an 8-year deal?
He might, right? But the money's the one thing. But the reality is, you look at guys who sign long-term deals in free agency, usually they go to a team and they don't win. So we can sit there. Taylor Hall's already made $50 million. Like, if he retires with 85 instead of 100, do you think it really matters? At that point, it doesn't matter. You've got so much money, it's irrelevant. It's not even money that the average human can even relate to.
So
right?
You're
most
not
people,
saying
most
to
people
do
don't
that.
Even have $100,000 in the bank, never mind
so
having
not,
hundreds of millions.
Your reasoning behind not doing longer-term deals isn't about money, maximize money. It's about picking your spot more often.
100%. Ensuring that, plus, if you're the good players, they stay at the top, they get more money. if they want it. But more importantly, they will then have to pick where they want to go, and they increase their chances of being on competitive teams.
Yeah, if you're not willing to sign the long-term deal, like, teams aren't going to give you top dollar if you're not going to commit years. Doesn't work that way. Like, it just doesn't work that way. You don't get top of the market money if you're only willing to give a team 2 years. Like, teams.
Well, usually
they
you get higher money for a shorter term. 100%.
When you're in your prime, though, when you're like, it's different when you're 31, 32. When you're 27, you know, teams want 4 or 5 years. Those are the best years of you. Anyway, I know what you're saying. It's a different situation this year because of the market and because of everything that's happening. I'm not criticizing Taylor at all. I think what he's doing is even where he's going, I think makes a lot of sense. But I'm not with you on the more guys should sign short-term deals more often. If you put $60 million on a piece of paper in front of these guys, I got no issue at all with them going, yep, I'll sign that. Could it be 68 if I waited till next year? Maybe, but I'm doing it.
Shogart, it'll be interesting to see if it changes in the future. Have a good one. We'll chat with you tomorrow.
Sounds good, buddy. See ya.